announce the winner later on in the programme. Over 300,000 people in Ireland suffer from osteoporosis, with one in two women over 50 fracturing a bone because of the disease. Now, Dolores Lawler-Pearson, an osteoporosis patient, and Dr. Donegal O'Grady, consultant rheumatologist at University Hospital Waterford, are working together to advocate for better fracture care in Ireland, and they're both with me in studio. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Morning.
Now, Dolores, when did you first get diagnosed with osteoporosis?
1996, I had a spinal fracture, and
what happened? I mean,
I just fell down a few steps of stairs at home. I was living in the UK at the time, was admitted to hospital, and a sharp-eyed young registrar decided to send me for bone density scan, and then they discovered it was osteopenic. And since then, it stayed stable for quite a long time, and then over the last sort of 10 years, I've had...
Okay, but you were a very young woman at
35.
The time. 35?
Yeah.
When this happened?
Yeah.
So, very unexpected, out of the blue.
Totally unexpected.
Did they give you any reason why you might be suffering from osteoporosis?
Yeah, probably a hormonal imbalance, which I wasn't aware of.
Okay, now, what treatment were you put on?
Nothing.
Nothing?
No.
So, what happened in the intervening years? Did you just keep falling and breaking?
No, the breaks didn't happen too often. I was actually put on HRT. Hormone replacement therapy.
To try and adjust the hormone imbalance,
but no treatment. At the time, they said there wasn't any treatment for osteoporosis. Yeah. That was the best thing that they could do for me. But then, as it progressed, I obviously needed more treatment, and I had fractures. And you go to one hospital, another fracture, another hospital. But there was no coordination between anybody.
So basically, and we'll talk to the doctor in a moment about this, your bones...
They're crumbling, basically.
And they break very easily.
Yeah.
All right, Donegal, let's talk about what it is, osteoporosis.
So it's a condition that causes the structure of bone to be weaker than it should, with the result that it fractures more easily than it might. The technical definitions and the bone density scan results, they match reasonably closely, but they're not exactly the same. So we will make distinctions between, as you heard there, osteopenia and osteoporosis, which refer to different levels of bone density. But we would primarily be focused on the concept of it being a condition that makes bone more easy to fracture. If it fractures more easily, that's osteoporosis.
Now, one of the reasons you might have this, we heard about a hormonal imbalance. And say after menopause, is that more likely?
So after the menopause is the most common reason why it occurs, and age-related bone loss is the other very significant factor. And you put those two things together, it results in most of the fractures occurring in older women.
But men can suffer from this.
Absolutely, yes. So it does occur in men for slightly different reasons. And the key thing with any person who turns up in a hospital with a fracture is that we can identify what the underlying causes are and try and treat those, as well as treating the osteoporosis itself.
In terms of trying to avoid this, if you don't have it now, the hormonal imbalance may occur, and therefore that can be addressed if you detect it early enough before it causes osteoporosis. But other things, I mentioned smoking.
Absolutely. So smoking is a very significant risk factor. Bone health investment, if you want to call it that, in childhood is really critical. We know that the dairy intake is declining steadily. We know that kids are not taking as much exercise as they used to. And the bone that you have at 40 is the bone that you built in your 20s, so that you're living off that investment for the rest of your life.
But the kids who would have full milk on their cereal in the morning in days of yore, even if people said the cereal was more like cardboard than anything nutritious, the milk was doing them a power of good.
Absolutely, yeah. And there are both the declines in the dairy intake, and there are other things which are competing now. So sweeteners in carbonated drinks, even the citric acid in carbonated drinks, is harmful. The exercise levels, as I say, smoking is declining, perhaps as a lifestyle choice for a lot of people, but it's still a significant factor in those people who are at risk of fracture and in their 60s. Alcohol is significant, and again, slightly complicated, because there are people who don't drink at all, who used to drink a lot, and they appear as a zero. So the curve for alcohol association is complex.
But I presume alcohol has another effect. If you're stoicious, you might fall. And if you have osteoporosis, you might have a fracture.
Yeah.
And a bad fracture.
Yeah, and it seems funny, but I spend every week listening to people's fracture stories to try to determine whether they should be on osteoporosis treatment or not. And one of the most important things that you subtract from the decision to put a person on osteoporosis medication are the circumstances in which the fall occurred. And sadly, alcohol does contribute significantly.
Now, in terms of diagnosing it, is it now a fairly clear-cut bone scans that will give you a diagnosis?
Yeah, with the caution that the interpretation of a scan result is critically dependent on age. So while you might hear sometimes the expression of, oh, you have the bones of a 70-year-old, that's not really accurate. The significance of a bone density result is different in a 70-year-old than a 50-year-old and in a person who's had a fracture before. So there are tools, calculators, that allow us to determine the impact of smoking plus alcohol.
Okay, but
plus
you
age.
Have a fairly high confidence level that you can diagnose correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. So the decision to treat is the critical thing.
So what's the treatment?
So there's basically three options available. There are a number of different tablets taken daily, taken weekly, taken once a month. There are injection medicines available, and there's a bone stimulating treatment available, which improves or increases bone density more than the others.
What about people just saying, I'll have more calcium, I'll take calcium pills, supplements, I love cheese, I'm going to have lots of cheese, and da-da-da. Does that work?
So, controversial, short answer, in a person who's had a fracture, they're not enough. In a person who's trying to improve their lifestyle and improve their bone health, then it is an important factor.
Okay, and your cardiac colleague's saying, don't eat cheese. And you're saying, eat loads of cheese.
Okay, so again, the devil is in the detail. Low-fat options will satisfy both of us.
Okay, all right, very good. Now, the question, Dolores, of the fracture liaison, explain what it is and why there should be more of it.
So I said, up until 2 years ago, I attended for every fracture a different hospital, sent home, and that was the end of it. Then I had a fracture and met with one of Dr. O'Gordick's team, and that's when they discussed. I was on no medication at all at that point.
And so every time you went in, even though you knew you had suffered from osteopenia, yeah, you went in and your bones were mended as best they could,
yeah,
and then off you go.
Yeah. No follow-up. You know, there was nothing to keep an eye to see if it's progressing anywhere. But when I attended Dr. O'Grady's clinic, they followed up on it. A year later, I was called back for another, bone density scan. And the lady I spoke to, she sat there, Melanie, she was so helpful.
Okay.
Gave me more information than I've ever had.
So now you know the A's, B's and C's of your condition. And if you should have another fracture and ended up, say you're on your holidays in Limerick, and you end up in a, would they know or would they be able to find out about you, or what way would the liaison work? Donna.
So the liaison part is really just about connecting the dots at the time of a person presenting with a fracture. It's the fundamental difference between fracture, perhaps, and preventing stroke after a person presents with a mini stroke, or preventing a heart attack in a person who's presented with angina, is that the person that the person encounters in the emergency department is not invested in preventing the next fracture. The orthopaedic surgeon is not invested in preventing
the
next fracture.
Whereas the doctor is definitely trying to make sure you don't have another one.
Correct. And it's not that nobody cares about the fracture. It's about the diverging requirements for the surgeon has to be in theatre preventing, treating fractures. So they're not going to take the time to run this kind of service. So the liaison critically is about putting the patient in contact with the scan, the educational advice about what's your condition, what treatment do you need to take. We know that if we improve the person's knowledge about their treatment, it improves the likelihood of them continuing to take treatment over time.
How likely is it that if someone has a fracture today, they go to A&E, that they will encounter a fracture liaison person?
There are four fracture liaison services in Ireland, and in most of the other places, the figures would suggest that as few as 1 in 10 people will get the proper assessment and treatment advice.
So where are the four at the moment?
So there's one in Talla, there's one in Waterford, there's one in Dublin, and one in Limerick.
And the Dublin one, there are many hospitals in Dublin.
So in Vincent's.
In Vincent's, yeah. Okay, so we need more of this.
We need. There are 16 hospitals that receive patients who have had an orthopaedic fracture, and those trauma and orthopaedic centres, 16 of them in Ireland, they all need to have this service in place.
I suspect this might be self-financing because it'll stop the future fractures, one would hope.
Yeah, it is self-financing. There's more than enough evidence to demonstrate that. The really big difference in trying to prove this case is that the money that you save, the money you spend today is
you
going to prevent a fracture
in 10 years' time. You see, that's
a shorter window, about 3 years it takes to demonstrate the effectiveness of the input now will reduce fractures in the future. But people talk about the spiraling cost of healthcare all the time. They say, the changing demographics, and yet this is a very simple, cost-proven, effective strategy.
Yeah, we were talking about obesity, and it's the same kind of thing. You know, the doing some sort of weight control measures when you're younger means means you're not going to be type 2 diabetic in another 15 years.
Yeah, and that's a lifestyle investment, whereas we're talking here just about a healthcare investment, which can return much more quickly, but nonetheless, the annual cycle of budgeting and the silos of the money spent in orthopaedics is saved on nursing home care. We have to get away from that kind of thinking in order to prove this case.
Finally, I should ask you, Dolores, you're wearing kind of a halter.
Yes, a back brace.
Is that to help protect you or to support the bones that are not quite what they should be?
I've got 5 collapsed wedge fractures in my spine, and because my balance is very bad, it's particularly because if I have to use public transport or walking, my balance is not good, and I tend to put it on just for safety reasons, really.
Okay, but you don't have to wear that at home.
No, I don't have to wear it at home. Yes. No, not at all. No.
But it just shows how this condition can affect your life.
Yeah, totally. It totally has.
All right. Well, look, thank you both very much for coming in. Dolores Lawler Pearson and Dr. Donacha O'Grady, consultant rheumatologist at University Hospital Waterford.
Thank you, Pat.
Join the conversation. Text us on 53106. Text